Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, March 1st, 2023. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have seven members present. Councilmember Jones-Ivy is joining us by Zoom this evening. Would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Historic Preservation Commission will meet next on March 6th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the Planning and Zoning Commission will meet on March 7th at 6 p.m. right here in the Council Chambers. The Water Utility Commission will meet next on March 13th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the next Town Council, it will be a regular session and study session on March 15th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Councilmember Green has a report.
Could have the first slide. There we are. I had the honor of attending the graduation of four new police officers for Oro Valley, and they are from left to right up there. We've got Michelle Torres, we've got, let's see, in the middle is, their names are on the top. I can't read. Anyway, the gentleman at the lower right, Clayton Haskins, I think there were about 30, 35 graduates, and he was the outstanding marksman in the group. So hopefully he won't ever have to use that in Oro Valley, but he's definitely a straight shooter and was awarded for it. So it was a wonderful thing, and Kara Riley, our chief of police, really did a super job. So look forward to seeing them when they come on duty soon. The other thing, this is from the Oro Valley Historical Society. I've always wondered, probably you all knew, how Mount Lemmon got its name. But it turns out that Sarah Plummer Lemmon was one of the first white women, maybe the first white woman in record, to climb Mount Lemmon. And she climbed it with her husband, J.G., who was a Civil War vet, spent time in Andersonville, struggled, was sick a lot, but many, many of the botanicals in Arizona have been described by both Sarah Plummer Lemmon and her husband, J.G., so they're pretty special. One of the local authors, Wynn Brown, actually published a book this year, which the cover of it is shown here. I would commend it to you to read. It's really, really very good. How hard these folks struggled and how they really preserved these plants that are so special to us. And the other thing about Sarah, she was also an artist, which touches my heart, and she did watercolors of hundreds of different plants of all types. So something that I really enjoyed hearing Wynn Brown talk about at the Historical Society. The next issue is from the Oro Valley Theater Company. The Sunshine Boys was sold out. It's the first time we've done five performances, and they were all sold out. The next one is in April. It's Neil Simon's Plaza Suite. So get your tickets early and often. It's a play in which one man plays three parts and one woman plays three parts. And the woman is our own Sasha Case, and she is fantastic. So get your tickets early and often because they're going to sell out. And that's my report.
Thank you, Councilmember Green. Other reports this evening? I'll just quickly report that this past Saturday, the Tohono O'Toole and the Children's Museum had a ribbon cutting for the Children's Museum opening at Tohono O'Toole. This is a wonderful partnership. And I certainly invite you to look at what the Children's Museum has done in cooperation with Tohono O'Toole. It's really a wonderful amenity for our community. And then yesterday was the groundbreaking for the Arizona Heroes Memorial, which will be in Naranja Park. Actual work will begin soon, but it was a wonderful event. Vicki Schumann helped organize that, and we appreciate all those that were able to participate. Mr. Cornelison, your report, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do not have any reports this evening.
Thank you. Reviewing the agenda this evening, I would like to recommend that we move the regular agenda item 1 to be the next item before call to audience and the consent agenda.
I would second that.
Okay. Any disagreement? Okay, so we'll go forward, Mr. Standish, regular agenda item 1.
Community Center Elevator Schematic Design Review, Discussion, and Possible Direction to Staff to Complete Construction Plans.
So this evening, our Town Engineer and Public Works Director, Paul Kiesler, will present this item. Thank you, Mr. Kiesler.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. I just want to take this time to bring a brief update of where we are. Since November 16th, we had a very productive meeting where we got a lot of direction from the Council. Heard loud and clear that there were a couple of, if we go next, where's the, sorry. We heard loud and clear from Council with regard to how to access the facility itself. There were a couple preferred options. One was to create a ramp system that would connect the existing ADA parking spaces up to the existing entrance at the mid-level. The second one was, of course, to lower the whole front of the building and enter at the ground level, we'll call that the first floor, and create new handicap parking spaces. Either option from an ADA perspective is viable. Of course, one is more provides more service for those with disabilities than the other, but it boils down to a matter of cost, and we're going to get into that in just a little bit. So with that direction, and on top of that, there was an overwhelming preference by council for an elevator instead of the LULA, which is that limited use, limited access elevator, which I presented in November. And we took that to heart. And what we did was we created 4 scenarios or 4 alternatives. And the reason that we did 4 alternatives is because we do have a constrained budget. And the elevator, we hadn't studied yet. I wanted to make sure that we're doing a schematic design that fits within the budget or somewhere around the budget. But we also looked at the LULA as well because they're very similar. The amount of work to do on that schematic design, really kind of tomato-tomato. Schematic design is really that look, that large level look at where there's conflicts. You know, the architect created a 3D representation of the building, and the appliance, put it in there so that we could identify those issues that could cause cost. So with that, I just want to jump in. We have four options here. One was the conventional elevator with the existing entrance as is. That includes the ramp. Conventional elevator and the lowered entrance. And then, of course, the LULA with the same 2 parameters. So with that, I'm going to jump right into this so that we can, if there's further additional council direction. So option number 1 was the elevator and the existing entrance. And we won't read through all of this, but the bottom line is that with an estimate, as a professional estimator and the architect, which is our designer, put a 15% contingency in on the construction cost. And the $1.25 million also includes the architecture and engineer's cost as well. So that's an out-the-door estimate as it stands today. Really quick, we talked about this last time. The location is on the back side of where the existing administration offices are. You end up with access to all three levels. There are some floors that we have to modify, some staircases that we have to modify. But really, the bulk of the work is the installation of the elevator. There is one point I do want to bring up, and that is the elevator shaft itself. It actually pokes through the roof. And that's because of the required headroom that you need over it, mostly for fire. It's a code requirement. But it's not a huge, huge cost issue because the roof joists run right where that elevator would be. So you can actually trim the joists and attach them to the elevator shaft because the elevator shaft is masonry itself. The next one that we looked at was, of course, an elevator and lowering an entrance. This was the most expensive of the options, clocking in at $1.75 million. And again, it's an estimate. It's also all-inclusive, which includes a contingency and the architect's fees. Fairly self-explanatory, really in the same place. There's a few more floors to address. The major change on the interior outside of the floors in the elevator, of course, is the staircase, because the staircase works with that intermediate level now. That would all be taken out, and then there would be kind of a serpentine staircase to be able to get from the bottom floor to the third floor, or the top, the restaurant floor. And then the actual access to the golf administration offices would be either one through the elevator, but there has to be a means of fire of escape in case the elevator's not working. So there's an exterior staircase for emergency purposes only. Kind of same, just a depiction of vertical or elevation of what we're looking at. The blue represents the actual elevator column. It fits in the building nicely. The third one, going to the Lula, which I know was not a preference of council, but again, making sure that I'm able to present you with options. Very similar to the first case that I showed you. It clocked in at $750,000, and that's primarily because when you look at it, it fits neatly in the building. It doesn't take a huge amount of building modifications to make that happen. With that, the fourth option, which is the Lula with a lowered entrance at $1.35 million. So a couple more slides here I just wanted to go through, and that is the comparison between the Lula and the elevator. To give the council a good point of reference, the size of the elevator that fits in that space is nearly identical to the size of the elevator we have in this building. So that would give you kind of a sense of feel for what you'd get. The Lula, of course, is a 1 to 2 person elevator. Really, it's rather small, not much bigger than this podium that I'm standing at. As far as the interior space, enough for a person to stand behind a wheelchair, and that's about it. So with that, recommendations, again, after hearing what council's preference was with the elevator, staff was recommending that we move forward on the schematic design with both lowering the front or moving on to construction documents between lowering the front and not lowering the front so that we could get real bits, because these are all estimates at present. We all know how estimates have been reacting in the market today, and we really need hard bids to really give you that full picture. I feel comfortable because we've identified, major issues through the schematic design. But again, with the way the volatility of the market is, we really need to get this bid. Unless council would have another direction for us, I was going to give the architect as of tomorrow a push to go full bore with the two designs for the elevator. With that, I just want to talk a quick schedule so everybody has a realistic expectation here. We have to, there's a lot of detail that goes into those engineering plans. I hope to have those plans finished by July. We go out for permitting and bidding in July. I can do those simultaneously. Award the contract to start that construction in August. And then depending on which way it goes, 6 to 9 months, and really the contractor will have a lot of say on that with respect to how how they'll be able to maneuver that. And, of course, we'll have to have interim operational plans because it's still a facility that is in full operation. With that, any questions, any comments, direction?
Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. Let me just say that if there's anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this agenda item, this is your opportunity to do so. You'd fill out a blue card. I don't have any blue cards at the moment, but we did bring this agenda item up earlier. So if you would like to speak to this topic, if you'd fill out a blue card and bring it to Ms. Stein, we'll see that you have an opportunity to speak. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Mayor, if there's no blue cards, I'd like to make a suggestion in the form of a motion to open up discussion for council. I move to direct staff to move forward with alternative number 2, the full elevator and lowered entrance for approximately $1.75 million using the already budgeted $1.5 million with the remainder to come from the existing community center fund from the unallocated $1 million fund balance.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Discussion, questions? Councilmember Solomon?
I think there's no doubt after council's looked at this and the ADA community's looked at this that that is the one and only choice for us to go, certainly the best, to finally provide a respectable ADA access where people aren't sent around to the back of the building. They're not having to deal with, you know, very small confined elevators. This moves the handicap parking, which we really need, right up to the entrance where it should be. So I think staff's done a great job in coming up with this option. From my recollection, we have $1.5 million budgeted already. The $750,000 items we had budgeted over the last few years.
If I may, just to set the record straight, we're using a little bit of that money for to build the ramp in the back for that emergency access. So we have approximately $1.4 million left over after that ramp.
Right. Okay. So just and to, you know, the public know that we've already budgeted $1.5 million for this. So this is not like something we weren't expecting, and it's certainly something that's, you know, long overdue and money well spent.
Councilmember Green.
I had the opportunity to meet with the wheelchair tennis players and to discuss the Lula and to discuss the elevator. And probably the most poignant comment was from the leader of the group. And he said, Mo, when I bring a date here and come up to the community center and want to go in and have something to eat, he said, I have to go down that ramp in the back and pass the dumpster, and I get to meet her inside about 15 minutes later. And he said, please, get us an elevator if you can. I asked him about the Lula. He said he had experience using the Lula. And again, the issue there is if you come in with a group of people, you want to be able to go up the elevator with them. They can't. So I think the vice mayor's motion is really good. And I want to thank you and your staff for giving us the options that you have.
Thank you.
One question, Mr. Kiesler.
Yes.
The 8 handicap parking spaces that are shown on this, I mean, that's wonderful, and their proximity to the entrance of the community center. That is a limited number of spaces. There will be the additional space, well, the existing spaces, and I don't recall how many there are.
I believe 10.
Okay.
I'm going off of memory on that one.
So my question is, and this came up in our study session, if there was any way to connect with this option to the walkway to so
yes.
that, again, I know the distance isn't ideal, but it does provide 10 additional spaces. So you've got 18 spaces that would then have you know, be able to access the entrance of the building. It would seem a shame to have that gap there
right.
that would prevent somebody who, when these parking places are taken, to not be able to access the building and being so close.
Mr. Mayor, correct. That is the one thing that is missing off of the schematic design. I didn't want to hold up and go back to the architect on this, but yes, you noted that last time to make that connection so that we have more handicap spaces universally accepted to everybody. That will be a part of this. It was a small enough cost item. I felt it was more important to move forward for time than to.
Okay. Well, I'm glad it's not forgotten.
No, it was not forgotten.
Okay. Councilmember Jones-Ivy, did you have any questions?
I did, Mr. Mayor, and essentially it was the question that you had asked Paul. I was wondering how these the spaces in front of the community center were going to tie into the ones on the side, so that if all of these spaces were tied up, how people could access from the ones on the side. So, Paul, and with moving forward and the changes that are going to occur, will that happen so that if our handicaps parking runs over into that area on the side, those people will have easy access still into the community center?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Paul, thank you for your work on this. If option two is approved and successfully constructed, what would be the status of the overall ADA compliance of the community center at that point?
Well, Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, much better than it is today. Although we do have we have compliance today, we're making it better by putting in that ramp in concrete in the back. The purpose of that ramp, when this all gets done, creates a solid path out in case of an emergency. It makes it better. So we have compliance. We're making that compliance better. Compliance is not just black and white. There's several layers to that.
Final question. Is 18 spaces enough for a facility of this size? I'm trying to keep track. I see 8 new spaces and 10 existing.
So that's a good question, Councilmember Bowen. We're also looking at a place down by the fitness area as well. So when we get to the parking lot project, I've already got the designer looking at that to see if there's some additional handicap spaces down there, because there are some fitness needs as well. Trying to maximize the amount of handicap spaces that we can get, because the parking lot is built on such a long, steep slope that becomes a bit of a difficult task, but we're trying to squeeze in as many as we can. It just becomes a matter of the actual geometry of the grade of the parking lot itself.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Councilmember Green?
I'm certainly in favor of function over aesthetics, but I wanted to ask about where the elevator pops through the ceiling. Can a facade be put up there, or would that be needed, or how would you handle that?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Green, I think the most cost-effective way would be to do an architectural treatment to the actual shaft itself to make it integrate and look like part of the building. If we were to put like a screen wall around it, well, that's more structure that you have to put up there and additional costs. And we're trying to be as efficient as possible with this, but make it look nice.
Okay, thank you.
I think Councilmember Bowen's question about, you know, the adequacy of 18 handicap parking spaces, I think we certainly want to maximize as many as reasonable.
Correct.
And just looking at this design, I don't know if there's any way to add, and there may not be, Paul, on either end.
There may be. Okay. As we get into more detailed construction, yeah. If we can expand more, Mayor, yeah. We absolutely will expand more.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
If I'm understanding this correctly, there's also sort of a driveway here where people could be dropped off as well if they weren't the driver. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. What we're going to do is we're going to maintain that portico share. So far, everything that we have, all the information we have, indicates that the foundation is low enough that we can lower that grade and still maintain that portico share. So you get that level entrance in. And it can be an all-weather entrance as well.
Okay. So, I mean, I feel like that helps mitigate in the event that there's some really big thing happening, like a tournament or some type of thing where, all the spaces would uncommonly be full.
Right.
We would still have that opportunity for people to be dropped off in an all-weather environment where they could access the elevator in a level place, potentially we could even, if there was a really big event, we could even provide some valet type parking or something, you know?
Sure.
I mean, but I feel like for overall function, this will work well. And then we have the opportunity for those rare large events where we might need more, I think, to accommodate in a good fashion.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Green.
On the left of the drawing that we're seeing right now, the cross-hatched areas on the left are current handicap parking, and the distance from that walkway to the area where the first wheelchair access is only about 30 yards. So it's not that far if you needed to connect it. So
correct. Great. Yes. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no more questions, we'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay? The ayes have it, 7-0. Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. Okay, appreciate your work on
thank
this.
Thank you.
We'll go to call to audience. So pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. Tricia Tozier, and if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley when you come to the podium. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Patricia Tozier. I am a resident of Oral Valley, but tonight I'm reading a letter from another person that lives in Oral Valley, Ed Clary, who's out of town on work. He's a pilot. And he writes, this evening I'd like to discuss the proposed rezoning of the residential property acquired by the Oral Valley Church of the Nazarene. From now on, I'm just going to say the church. The Planning and Zoning Commission rejected the project after literally years of working and the PNZ staff with the PNZ staff to bring it into compliance with the general plan. By the time it gets to the commission, it's almost unheard of for a project not to be compliant. Yet the church clearly is so inflexible that it cannot accomplish this. Yet they have been given opportunity after opportunity, kicking the can down the road, and work to either elect a favorable council or delay commission review to get new commissioners or threaten litigation if they don't get their way. In the same way a playground bully threatens, give me what I want or else. From the pulpit, the church, with its at least three deep pocket outside supporters and thousands of congregants, all led and organized by an impassioned minister, has specifically related that it is somehow David and it is involved in a struggle where the town, who is neutral, has bent over backwards to facilitate the process despite the church's intransigence, and the neighbors, who they have ignored and disrespected, they are calling them Goliath. If it weren't so disturbing, it would be laughable. Who is bullying whom? The church has threatened a lawsuit, which is based on the legal premise that a church can essentially do anything it wants with its land if it asserts that what they want has to do and is required by their religion. Don't be intimidated. Every legal precedent has limits. One cannot yell fire in a crowded theater, the First Amendment notwithstanding. Sports are wonderful, but they are not required to protect or practice one's religion. If they were, why doesn't every Nazarene church have such a facility? Where does this stop? If you approve this, what precedent have you set? Every entity in the town will now be able to say you approve that for them. You need to approve this egregious waiver for us. Zoning will cease to have any function or place in Oral Valley. Please do the right thing. Vote this proposal down. The PNZ Commission, in its job to ensure that it meets code, and has decided that it does not. That alone should be enough to reject. But even if that met code, it's your job to decide whether something is a good idea and in the right location or not. At every level, this isn't the right location for something like this. So the answer is simple. Please do the right thing and vote this down. Thank you, Council, for your consideration.
Karen Steinbrunn.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Karen Steinbron. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I own two properties in close proximity to the church. And I've spoken to you before. We've concentrated and talked a lot about the safety and traffic issues on Calle Concordia. But have we looked at what happens to the other streets, Buena Vista and Calle El Milagro, where one of my properties is? And they are narrow streets, two lanes, no shoulders, and have been sites of fatal traffic accidents. How many here have had a fatal traffic accident in front of your home on El Milagro, July 4th, 2016? And we're going to be increasing traffic on these small streets as well as Calle Concordia if we allow this mega sports facility to go in. And I'm concerned. I mean, we have automobiles, motorcycles. We have pedestrians. That was a pedestrian fatality. We have bicycles on these roads. We have equestrians. This is just not where we need to add more traffic with this sports center. And as we go way back on Buena Vista and Calle Concordia, we also had a fatal traffic accident, and that was June 2nd, 1996. So I don't know how many of you have been in the town that long, but these are serious issues, and I hate to see us add more traffic. Thank you.
Anthony Ferrara.
Mr. Mayor, council members, my name is Anthony Ferrara. I am a resident of Oro Valley. This, as well as about the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarenes proposed rezone, I'll be brief. The land they purchased was residential property, and it should remain residential. If it comes before you, I encourage you to vote no on their proposed rezone. And if possible, I'd like your help in finding a suitable property for them that they might be able to swap it for the property in question so that everybody wins and maintain it as residential, find an appropriate place. I'd love your help in doing that. Thank you so much.
David Divert.
Good evening. My name is David Divert, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. At the last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, there were those from the Oro Valley Church of Nazarene who, of course, supported the project, the so-called sports complex. One of those who spoke and supported it was Miss Cherry Holmes, who was also quoted in the Explorer newspaper. However, she was less than candid in her support. First of all, she indicated she was a neighbor. Well, she lives over a mile away from the church. She has no direct visibility of the church. She won't experience any noise or any lighting or any traffic issues on the street she lives on. Secondly, she didn't disclose that she is one of the lead pastors of the church. She is currently the Connections pastor and was the children's pastor for many years. I find it disturbing that this information wasn't disclosed to the commission and those in attendance. The town staff recommended conditions to the church proposal to mitigate the effect of the project on the neighbors. One was relocate the building to the south closer to West Calle Concordia. The building is larger than the Fry's grocery store on Oregon and First Avenue and almost as big as the Home Depot. It's only transferring, this isn't mitigation, it's just transferring the burden from one neighbor to another. The other thing is they had other conditions that they supposedly would go by. How is the city going to enforce those? For instance, they say they're not going to have overlapping major events between the school and them. How about the bike races they have on Calle Concordia from the park? In other words, how are you going to enforce any of this, the parking, the traffic, and so on? The other issue I have is this, if praying before each sports activity is the basis for stating that the sports complex is a church is a stretch. Many professional sports teams say prayers as a group before games. Does this mean they are a religious organization with tax-exempt status? Does that mean that stadiums, arenas, or any other sports complex where they say prayers before the game is a church? This neighborhood has been here a long time before the church invaded, as I would say. It may be convenient, but the church needs to find a more appropriate and larger location for the sports complex and start being a good neighbor. It isn't too late. You have the knowledge and ability to stop. Thank you.
Tim Terrace.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, Council, and staff. My name is Tim Terrace, and I am an Oro Valley resident. A happy anniversary is in order, as today begins the second year that the CBV group has been coming before this forum to oppose the Oro Valley rezone request. The process is now in year three. The application has been delayed again for unknown reasons. The church delayed it last year, most likely for an election that didn't go their way. The application process thus far has been longer than the U.S. involvement in Korea, World War I, and the Gerald Ford presidency. The church knowingly bought property not zoned for the project. Unsuccessful thus far, the church has not compromised. Any changes were driven by town code, not the neighbors. The proposal does not properly align with the town general plan, the cultural heritage preservation plan, and ignores the Rock Art Ranch and residents report. The Planning and Zoning Commission rejected their concept, and the P&Z presentation repeatedly included the word incompatible. When asked by a P&Z commissioner, has the applicant looked at other locations for its use? Paul Olin responded, no, they haven't looked elsewhere because this is home for them. Home? No, this is their church, but the neighbors surrounding the church, it is their home. The continuing jockeying for advantage by the church inflicts an intentional disservice without consequence or recourse. Threatening litigation when no one but they are buying into this blatantly unsuitable proposal is ludicrous. The community, and especially the neighbors, have been and are continuing to be harmed by the delays and secrecy. Viewed with skepticism, mistrust, and alarm, the church has become an unwelcome neighbor. It is obvious that this situation is without a satisfactory solution at this time. That, however, is not the final word. It seems very clear that the town needs to step up and actively participate in facilitating an agreement for a different location involving perhaps a land swap of equal value or some other amenable accommodation. The church can continue their religious outreach and the neighbors retain their lifestyles. Everyone wins. With the town's help, this successful conclusion is well within reach. It is in the best interest of the town, the neighbors, and the church to do so. Please consider it. Many, many people are counting on you to help. Thank you.
Doug Dalby.
Good evening. It's nice to be in out of the cold weather tonight, actually. My name is Doug Dalby. My wife and I are Oro Valley residents and have lived on Calle Buena Vista for 43 years. Our property's southeast corner touches the northwest corner of the property that OVC had recently acquired and is now trying to rezone. We are very much opposed to this request to rezone for a multitude of reasons that have been enumerated to you over the past 2 years, not only by me, but also by the adjoining neighbors. I won't recap them tonight. This is simply not the right location for a project of this magnitude. In a recent article in Explorer, when Paul Olin, the church representative, was asked if OVN,
OVCN had looked at other locations that might be compatible with this use. His reply, referring to the church, actually summed it up nicely for the opposing neighbors. Referencing the church, he stated, quote, "This is home for them, and they have invested in it significantly over the years," close quote. He's exactly right. But the term "them" in this case applies to us, the homeowners in the area who have made homes here and have invested significantly in them and are opposed to the expansion. This is truly home for us and not simply a place where we spend 1 or 2 hours a week if our schedule allows. An influential member of OVCN recently made a comment to one of our neighbors regarding us, the surrounding neighbors. In reference to our decreased property values, if the rezone is approved, the comment was, "They have been there for a long time and can afford the losses, and yet they haven't been willing to look for alternative locations. Please help us protect this unique neighborhood in Oro Valley from commercial encroachment and deny the request to rezone. Thank you."
Joanne Michelson.
Hi, my name is Joanne Michelson, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. Thank you, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, and council members for the opportunity to again address you on the proposal submitted by Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. As I've stated in my previous address to you, this proposal impacts so many of us and our town. Additional traffic to our already burdened neighborhoods, future impact of a rezone decision in our neighborhood, and incompatibility issues of the structures and lighting. I would like to emphasize this evening the Oro Valley Historic Preservation Commission. This commission has been working to develop and maintain historic properties of our special community. Not too long ago, a study was conducted to implement a heritage preservation program. One of the components of this program is historic neighborhoods and recognizing them. As we all know, the town incorporated in 1974. The first subdivision was plotted in 1930s, with the neighborhood's construction starting in the late 50s. During the preservation plan study, it was stated that in the category of rock art, ranch, and resident neighborhoods, we have reached the 50-year threshold and can be considered for historic recognition. Currently, the town of Oro Valley has preserved the Honeybee Village and Steam Pump Ranch. During the study, it was determined there is a large gap in preserving our potentially historic architecture in town, and that its land base has a significant amount of residential architecture that is at least 50 years old. In the survey, it indicated there are 4 subdivisions eligible for National Registry recognition: Oro Valley Estates, Suffolk Hills, Campobello, and Shadow Mountain Estates. 3 out of the 4 are directly impacted by the Oro Valley Church and the Nazarene proposed planned facility and rezoning. In the report, the recommendation to the town of Oro Valley, it was stated on Appendix B, page 16, I quote, "Reason for nomination is the recognition puts the neighborhood as a place of importance in local, state, and national history, thus strengthening the community's awareness and pride in its unique heritage. There are 92 homes in Oro Valley Estates predating 74, 32 predating 65, 138 homes in Shadow Mountain Estates predating 1974, 77 predating 1965. That's 51% of the homes. 12 in Campobello predate 1974, 9 predate 1965, 36%. 8 in Linda Vista No. 2 predate 1974, 5 predate 1965, that's 11%. By Oro Valley Church and the Nazarene acquiring the Tellez Ranch in Linda Vista No. 2, we have already lost a valued historic aspect of our neighborhood by the church demolishing the structures. Why this was allowed to happen without a cease and desist order for the scraping of a residential property without a permit is baffling to me. I'm asking the town to stop this destruction of our valued history and suggest a viable solution. The town work with the Oro Valley Church and the Nazarene to find an alternative location for the proposed structure and fields. Thank you.
Tim Fagan.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, staff, my name is Tim Fagan. My wife and I built our house at 9510 Calle Buena Vista 32 years ago. My children played youth sports here. They were available. The OVCN application to rezone from R144, that is one house per 3.3 acres, farms and ranches, has been postponed. The status is unclear. I'm in favor of youth sports, including church-sponsored youth sports, but the proposed rezoning is not right for this neighborhood for all the reasons you've heard. There are multiple parcels of appropriate land available in Oro Valley. OVCN should purchase appropriate land for their youth sports program. Thank you.
Mary, and I apologize, I'm Tav Miller? Top Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, and Town Council, and all of the staff that's here today. My name is Mary Topmiller. My husband and I live in Oro Valley, and we've been here for 30-some years. We live on Calle Buena Vista, so we're directly impacted by the church's activities. Over the past 2 years, we have attended the town council meetings or most of the town council meetings and all of the planning and zoning committee meetings. So, and despite some changes, I lost my place here. despite some changes in the proposal and discussions regarding the impact, none of the minor changes or the additional information provided has had really has provided any changes to our concerns or objections to the OVCN's proposal. So I would like one more time to address the subject of the increased traffic through our historic suburban rural neighborhood. At one of the meetings, the town's roadways or traffic manager, it may have been you, Mr. Kiesler, addressed the traffic and stated that at this point, without any additional traffic, adding a traffic light at La Cañada and a turn lane in front of CDO was being considered and was needed. So that really stuck with me, and I am alarmed by how much worse the traffic will become and what further changes to our neighborhood roads would be needed by adding this large entity that involves a significant amount of activity and traffic 7 days a week, as stated by the church. I believe and sincerely hope it is time to move on and find another solution. Specifically, OVCN should acquire another tract of land for their sports program. I, too, have noticed multiple close-by undeveloped pieces of land that can be accessed from Oracle Road. I certainly don't know if they're available, but I would urge the town of Oro Valley to assist OVCN in finding a more appropriate location and facilitating a land swap. So in addition, I want to sincerely thank the Planning and Zoning Commission and the whole town council for all of the attention to detail and the hard work you've all put into this and devoted to the concerns of our neighborhood. Thank you.
I have no other blue cards for call to audience, so I'll close call to audience at this time. We'll go to the consent agenda. Councilmember Bowen has requested that item B be removed from the consent agenda. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Mayor, I'd also like to pull item A.
Okay, so we're going to pull items A and B. So I move to approve item C of the consent agenda.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to item A, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. Just in reviewing this collection of minutes, I had one concern with the minutes on 2/16/23, the draft plan. At the end, it states there were no concerns mentioned. And having attended that meeting, I felt there were concerns mentioned earlier. And after the meeting, I had people contact me with some concerns. And so I would just like to remove the phrase, there were no concerns mentioned in that set of meetings, because I think that minimizes any concerns that were expressed. It's not that those concerns have to be addressed, but I just don't want to say there were none at all mentioned. So with that, I make a motion to approve all the minutes except for 2/16/23, removing the phrase, there were no concerns mentioned.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. Ayes have it, 7-0. Item B, Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. First, I'd like to express my appreciation to the staff for answering the five questions that I asked this week, but that leads to a couple of follow-ups. And the first follow-up question I have is, in the response, I learned from the Water Utility Director that NERDS gives us the possibility of lowering our need to wheel water through the Tucson pipe system by 40 to 50%. And my question would be, are the charges for wheeling based on gallons wheeled or per days? I don't think that has ever really been addressed. So I want to understand, if we wheel half as much, how does that impact the fees that we pay?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. Our intergovernmental agreement with the City of Tucson for wheeling our CAP water to our service area, it's based on an acre foot. So however many acre feet they deliver to us, that's what we pay. If we pay just for what we receive.
So reducing volume by 50% will reduce fees by 50%, basically.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's correct.
Second question. My understanding of the NERDS capacity is about 4,000 acre feet, and I think we're under that for the total usage of the town right now. Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that is correct. Right now, our IGA with the City of Tucson allows us to wheel approximately 2,600 acre feet a year, and I think in 2022, we wheeled just about 2,500 acre feet.
So we could conceivably get all the wheeled water through NERDS, but you've mentioned to us there are advantages to doing the wheeling up at Oracle and Hardy due to water pressure and level and things of that nature. Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, that's generally correct. The 4,000 acre foot capacity of the NERDS project, you know, in conjunction with the 2,600 feet that our IGA provides us with the City of Tucson, you know, that would be theoretically, 6,600 acre feet a year. If our allocation in the future remains, you know, that or higher, if we wanted to receive that much water, we would need both the Wheeling IGA and the NERDS project. But as we operate the system right now, NERDS could supply all of our capacity that we're using and then some now.
So in such a scenario, it's conceivable that we could use NERDS and not pay any wheeling costs if NERDS was fully online.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that is correct. There are some practicality issues in getting that CAP water through all of our service area. Some of our wheeling stations are located in such locations that it would be hard to get the CAP water that NERDS provides throughout some of those parts of our service area, primarily along Oracle Road.
Thank you. And then the final question I have relates to something I heard at the November 14th Water Utility Commission meeting. When higher administrative fees were presented to the commission, two different commissioners had the question of, you know, why did the administrative fees charged by the town to the water utility, you know, rise by $700,000. They had been $1 million just a couple years before, and now they're up to $1,700,000. So I asked, a follow-up question to the town, you know, what is the reason for that $700,000 increase? My understanding of the answer is there's a number of reasons for it. One, an analyst was hired, and two, there are higher IT costs that needed to be borne by the water utility as opposed to the town. The only analyst that I'm aware of that works on water issues is Mary Rallis, who works for you. Is there another analyst that was actually added recently to help us manage the water utility?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that is correct. So, you know, Mary Rallis, our water utility administrator, is solely funded by the Enterprise Fund. But we have two positions that the utility funds through IT. One is
our geographic information system analyst, a GIS analyst, and then we added a systems analyst through IT to support us with our supervisory control and data acquisition system to help us implement SpryPoint. You know, our IT demands had increased through the implementation of technologies within the last year or two.
Would that have been a case where you had always needed those services, but the level of services that you were needing recently?
Mr. Mayor, point of order. We seem to be way off the agenda item. We're now talking about staffing levels and administrative decisions. Putting on the agenda for a vote for a rate increase.
Sure. Councilmember Solomon, I think Councilmember Bowen's indicated this is his last question, and it can go to, although it's more to the substance of the issue, it can go to the issue of what that rate increase could look like. So let's let him get the answer to the question.
In addition, the report is attached. The report is a public record. The questions I'm asking come from the report, whether it's information in there or information that may be missing. The final question is in the response in the council report.
Mr. Mayor, point of order. I was just told that was his last question. He said that final question three times now. And a lot of this material works covered in the past at open public meetings he's simply not aware of or doesn't remember. And we're now going through it again in an inappropriate time. It's not on the agenda. It wasn't meant to be discussed.
I just made a statement. I didn't ask a question. My final question regards a response from the staff in which I see that there was a statement by the staff, and this isn't for you, this is for the town manager. There's a response to council from the town manager's office that said, you know, for a long time, the Water Utility Commission may not have been paying their fair share of the resources that they're using from the town. And I'm trying to understand how an enterprise fund, which is an independent entity, can be connected with not paying their fair share of town expenses, because it's not, in my mind, the responsibility of the entity to make sure the town can pay its expenses. The entity contracts with the town for services. So I wanted to ask the town managers, is that correct? Had we been undercharging the water utility for services we'd been providing?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, how the administrative fee had worked in past years was based on, I would say, probably old calculations and methodologies of how we calculated administrative services and support. So one example would be IT services. So when they utilize a GIS analyst, how does that get allocated, or does it not? You have human resources, you have legal, there's a variety of different departments, and actually incorporates most. And so what had occurred, and I think it was probably about maybe 2 years ago about this time, is we took an updated approach to look at how we were calculating that information and those amount of expenses to the enterprise fund that was being supported by, you know, general fund departments and staff and, you know, equipment and things like that. Did that answer your question?
So essentially, we saw a need that we had been charging approximately $1 million, but after further review, charging the water utility about $1.7 million was what we determined was the amount of resources that we were providing to them that we needed to charge them for.
After we did that analysis, yes.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. So I move to approve item B of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it. 7-0. Future agenda items? Hearing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Good night, everyone.